everybody. On this Wednesday, we've got an introduction for all the listeners out there to a new and very interesting royalty company. New as because they haven't been on the podcast before, but not necessarily new to the market. Unless maybe you are up in Canada and haven't seen this before, there's a reason for that, because they only trade on the AIM in the UK with the symbol TRR and on the OTC in the US with TDTRF. Trident Royalties has a very large portfolio of royalties within the company, and one very speculative and important one, might add. We're going to get that into the mix here in just a few moments. We're happy to welcome in CEO, Mr. Adam Davidson. Adam, welcome into the podcast. Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Trevor. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I guess give us that quick 30,000 foot view of Trident. Give us the pitch.
Yeah, sure. As you mentioned, relatively young company. We listed in middle of 2020. At that time, had only secured one royalty listed on our main exchange in London at 20 pence per share. If you fast forward to today, we've now got 21 assets, 13 of which are cash flowing and sort of hovering around 35 pence per share and good volume and liquidity along the way. So I think the market likes what we're doing, but really, the strategy in a nutshell and what makes us slightly different from the other 20-odd royalty companies is that we're looking to build a diversified portfolio. So there are a couple others out there that do that, but much, much lower sort of competition to pick up royalties. You know, we've got exposure to lithium, copper, mineral sands, iron ore, in addition to gold and silver, but a much larger playing field for us.
Okay. You know, diversify, we're talking precious metals, we're talking base metals, we're talking energy metals. Is there one of those three that maybe you kind of cling on to the most within the portfolio?
Really, the intent is to be somewhat agnostic. Incidentally, we've ended up with a lot more lithium exposure than probably originally intended. We'll get into that, but that's driven by sort of one single significant asset that's sort of grown on an NAV basis since acquisition pretty materially. But really, the objective is, you know, if people like royalties, I think they understand the instruments as a means to get exposure to the sector. Really, the challenge is, if you want to sort of get broad sweeping exposure to the mining sector via a royalty model, you almost couldn't really do that. You could get some iron ore exposure via Labrador or Deterra. You can obviously get your gold exposure through one of the gold royalty companies, but you couldn't sort of get to a representative exposure to the mining sector via royalties. And that just seemed like a gap that was missing in the market. And so it's constantly going to be a work in progress. But when we listed, we had just that one royalty. So we were effectively 100% iron ore because it was an iron ore royalty in operation down in Australia. But you fast forward to today, and on a NAV basis per analyst estimates, we're about 40% lithium, 30% gold, 20% copper, and then the balance is silver and iron ore and others. So yeah, as I said, we'll be a work in progress. The intent is to, you know, add nickel, add some more zinc exposure. We'd like more copper, but to broaden out the diversification such that investors who like royalties as a mean to get exposure to the space, yeah, they could pick up a single share of Trident and say, I've got exposure to the breadth of mining commodities from a royalty perspective.
Yeah. I mean, if people go to the Trident Royalties website, tridentroyalties.com, take a scroll through the list of projects, they have both offtake agreements and royalties. So you'll recognize there's a number of names here that listeners will recognize if they're also avid listeners of the podcast. You got the I-80 gold offtake, Victoria gold, a number of Equinox gold offtakes as well. So just take a scroll through that. Very familiar companies. Offtake, I guess another term for stream, that's basically what that is.
Yeah, I mean, the way I describe it is, you know, if a stream, sort of making up numbers, but if a stream entitles the holder to, say, 20% of a mine's production, and typically you then pay a fixed percentage of the spot price. So you may get 20% of every shipment of metal and you pay 20% of the spot price. With a gold offtake, it's a similar structure. You get, say, 20% of the gold production from a given mine, but you pay the lowest spot price over a trailing period. And then we're not trying to sort of go long gold in that sense. We effectively sell the shipment as soon as it's received, and you clip that difference between the lowest price and your sales price. And we're effectively doing this every day. So it blends out to sort of an equivalent of a roughly 1.4% NSR.
Okay. Adam, give me a sense. There's one here that really sticks out, and that's the Thacker Pass lithium property. Obviously, Thacker Pass with Lithium Americas is a huge project in Nevada. It is under construction, has been for quite some time. I guess maybe start from the beginning on this royalty, how you acquired it, and then what the expectations are on your end to see this royalty start paying up.
Yeah, so this one really kind of underscores the strategy. As you can imagine, if this was a Nevada gold royalty, you know, with a big mine in construction, you'd have the likes of Franco-Nevada and Royal Gold and others sort of chasing after it. And they frankly have much lower cost of capital than we do. So, you know, therefore can have lower return hurdles. But being a Nevada lithium royalty, as I said, just a much less competitive space. But yeah, stepping back, so this one was an existing royalty, so we didn't write the royalty. Obviously, Lithium America is a very well-capitalized operator. They don't need capital from Trident. But this royalty was written back in, I think, 2011 by a private equity fund. So, you know, obviously, lithium wasn't the commodity it is today. And then Thacker Pass itself was an exploration asset. In fact, I think the original capital for the royalty went in to fund a drill campaign. But you fast forward to today, the fund is a closed-end fund, so sort of can't remain open forever, has to liquidate its assets. We knew of the existence of the royalty. So really the catalyst for us was in January of 2021. Lithium Americas received their final key federal permit, and then that same week raised $400 million in an equity raise towards construction. So we were sort of on the phone that day, secured exclusivity, and bought the royalty shortly thereafter. You know, in terms of our return hurdles and what we're looking for in a deal, we were modeling a 16% post-tax IRR at the time. Probably worth flagging that that's 16%, you know, on a 40-year mine life. So for multi-decades, sort of year over year. But, you know, then the royalty's done a couple things that obviously you want to see have happen as a royalty holder. One is they increase the planned production profile. So we get our sort of little over 1% of their gross revenue in perpetuity. You know, it doesn't matter the size of the project. So that meant a larger CapEx ticket. In fact, from PFS to the final numbers quoted recently, the CapEx went from $550 million to $3 billion. But we don't suffer any dilution. We get our 1% regardless. So they increased the plant production profile by a third. And then that 16% IRR was predicated on a $12,000 per ton long-term lithium price. It's obviously been on a roller coaster since 2021, got up as high as nearly $90,000 a ton. But consensus is still around 20,000 a ton today. So significantly higher than what we were originally pricing in. So as you can imagine, that 16% post-tax IRR is now sort of north of 20% on our base case. And importantly, the assets moved in the right direction. So last month, the Department of Energy announced a $2.3 billion loan through their loan program. Just a couple of weeks ago, Lithium Americas raised $275 million. And then General Motors has committed to $650 million in an equity placement to secure the offtake. So the project's fully funded. As you say, it's in construction, rumbling towards first production in 2027. So pretty phenomenal royalty. You know, to put it in rough dollar terms, pick your lithium price, but at a round number of $25,000 a ton would be paying us north of $20 million a year, as I said, sort of year after year for multiple decades. And at some of those lithium price highs would be sort of comfortably north of $50 million a year on the royalty if it ever got north of 50,000 a ton. So it's very material royalty for us.
Yeah, that royalty in total 1.75%. Trident owns 60% of that.
Yeah.
So in net, just over 1% royalty return to you. Who owns the other 40%?
So it's still with the fund that has it. They, you know, we would have bought the entirety of it, but with our share authority that we had at the time, without needing to revert back into a shareholder vote, which would have kind of gummed up the transaction, we bought effectively as much as we could at the time.
Okay. Adam, and just because I'm playing out of curiosity, and because we're so familiar with net smelter return royalties more on the precious metal side and that royalty business, how does a royalty on a lithium project such as Thacker Pass work? I mean, when there's no smelter.
Yeah, it's in some ways it's much simpler. It's a gross revenue royalty, so okay. Basically every dollar they generate, you know, or sorry, every $100 they generate, we get $1.05 of that. And so it's pretty simple.
Pretty simple. Okay, I figured it was, but just thought I would ask. Interesting because that thing, despite all its hurdles it's had to jump through, it finds a way. With, like you said, General Motors and the United States government coming in with that loan program. What is the headwinds with Thacker Pass moving forward? Or do you feel like it's on its way to complete this construction here within the next year or two?
Yeah, I mean, feeling a lot more comfortable now than, say, this time last year. So I said we bought the royalty after they got their final key federal permit, but we went in eyes wide open that, you know, getting the permit issued is not the end. There's sort of challenges and then a challenge to the challenge. But they went through all those last year and the permit was upheld at the Ninth Circuit Court in July last year. So that effectively removed any more permit challenges, which obviously is a big deal in the U.S. To get that put to bed. And then with General Motors there as a sort of blue chip equity cornerstone and the U.S. DOE loan, I think we're through kind of the parts that had us potentially biting our nails. So now it's just the sort of standard mining construction and ramp up. And yeah, it's mining, so there can be delays and whatnot. But again, kind of goes back to the beauty of the royalty model is, you know, if there are delays or say there's a funding shortfall driven by a delay, you know, that could potentially mean, you know, they need to go out there and source more capital. And that's the risk equity holders live with. But as a royalty holder, you know, it really doesn't have much of an impact. There's a bit of a time value of money. Obviously, you want to see the cash flow sort of pulled forward as early as possible. But on a 40-plus year mine life, if there's a six-month delay and you're not wearing any dilution risk, we're pretty out of the woods at this point in time.
Okay. All right. I do want to ask you a little bit about the makeup of the company, the internal foundations of it. Like I mentioned before, Trident's only trading on the AIM and the OTC. You know, it's pretty interesting where you trade. You know, why those two markets and also why not Canada, which I'm sure is a question you get asked multiple times a day.
Yeah, definitely. We get asked that a lot. I wish I could say that there had been some grand design behind picking London, but it was really kind of the stars aligned and myself and a colleague that jumped into launch Trident crossed paths with some people that had a shell company listed in London and were sort of similarly interested in the royalty model. So we didn't know at the onset whether London would be a good market for us. Turns out it's been incredibly receptive. You know, if you look at our daily liquidity relative to peers with sort of a commensurate market cap size, we trade on the order of sort of 2 to 4 times daily volume what most of our peers of our size trade in Canada. And I guess the reason for the dual listing in the U.S. is a couple of reasons. One is quite a bit of our asset base, you know, is in the U.S. Obviously Thacker Pass, but also got a copper royalty in Arizona that's advancing nicely. Got gold offtakes on I-80 assets in Nevada and a gold project in California. So unintentionally, there's sort of this this critical mass that's sort of formed in the U.S. and Canada. But the other aspect is if you look at a lot of our peers that do have primary Canadian listings, quite a bit of their volume actually comes out of the U.S. In some cases, the majority of their volume. And obviously most Canadian investors can trade on U.S. OTC or the London listing for that matter, depending on your trading platform, it's pretty easy. So it's something we're always kind of looking at in terms of how can we optimize this. But yeah, I think the next logical step would be a full sort of U.S. listing down the track. You could see if we stepped up to sort of a full listing at the point at which maybe Thacker's in production and some of the other assets that are we haven't spoken about are that are in ramp up or construction also turn on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can make a bit of a splash as a dividend-paying diversified royalty company. So we want to time that right because you only get one shot at it, but that's kind of the current line of thinking.
Yeah, okay. With the formation of the company, you mentioned it was kind of formed out of a shell out of the UK. I assume it was somewhat of a cashed up shell. Talk about the cash that you have utilized and how the acquisitions of all these royalties and offtakes kind of came about. I mean, how did you finance these?
Yeah, so initially the shell was pretty small. It was a $4 million shell. And we went out there and raised 20 US to sort of get it launched. And we rebranded as Trident Royalties and sort of relisted in 2020. But the shell had been around since 2018. And we did a couple equity raises subsequent to that to build out the portfolio. But really the way we see things going forward, in this particular case, we're sort of taking a page out of our gold-focused peers book playbook. In that, just a couple of months ago, we announced a revolving credit facility with BMO and CIBC. So, you know, a couple of the good commercial banks that know this sector. Mm-hmm. As our portfolio has grown and become sort of more de-risked, you know, assets like Thacker sort of being de-risked, moving into construction. Obviously, the royalty model in general is a business model that banks like to lend to. You know, relative to a mining company with our sort of similar market cap, mm-hmm. you might have one asset. Probably not even in production, probably a development asset. So, banks sort of wear all that sort of single asset exposure. With our diversified portfolio, 21 assets around the world, multiple commodities, multiple jurisdictions, it's just a very easy model for them to lend into. I say all that because we expect to sort of lean on that revolver. It's the type of facility where you can draw on it, pay it back, draw on it, pay it back. It's about half drawn at the moment. It's a $40 million facility and then it has the option to extend it up to $60 million, obviously with the bank's consent. So scope to grow that facility and really low cost capital. In fact, not far off some of our multi-billion dollar peers with regards to cost. It's SOFR, which is replacing LIBOR. So SOFR plus 2.5% to 4.5%, depending on our leverage ratio. I'd probably say we're around kind of 3% at the moment. So SOFR plus 3%. It's pretty cheap. You know, the big boys are kind of SOFR plus 1.8. So that makes us incredibly cost effective to kind of arbitrage when we're deploying capital at sort of mid-teens and we've got, you know, a much lower cost of capital. That's where what drives our returns. I expect to sort of lean on that and obviously want to preserve share capital as much as we can and avoid equity raises.
Yeah. You have a number of these assets in the portfolio that are in production. Give us a general sense of what cash flow has been like here in Q1.
Yeah, sure. I think financials for royalty companies, as you know, are really hard to pick apart because, you know, you're offsetting revenue against sort of amortizing the purchase price of the royalties, and some of the royalties are fair value adjusted, so it's kind of a Gordian knot to try to figure it out. But at a very high level, our revenue last year, when we announced revenue quarterly, revenue for last year was $11 million. We see that stepping up this year because we do have assets. We've spoken a lot about Thacker, but there's plenty of other assets in the portfolio. Some in ramp up, some turning on, like Greenstone Gold Mine in Canada is turning on this month. We've got a gold offtake on that. The Preciosa Silver project in Mexico started running stockpiles through before they move into fresh ore. We've got a royalty on that. We expect to see revenue stepping up, obviously, but if you take last year, $11 million in revenue, our G&A is about $4 million. Really depends how active we are, because the bulk of that's sort of paying lawyers and technical consultants and tax accountants to, you know, structure up the deals. So kind of be a bit of variability, but we sort of try to be conservative and pencil in $4 million a year. And then debt service, if fully drawn, that facility would be $2.5 million a year to service. As I mentioned, it's about half drawn. So, you know, we're generating free cash flow at the moment. Obviously, it's not enough to sort of self-perpetuate acquisitions. You know, we need to draw on that facility to make more acquisitions. But we're in a comfortable spot where, unlike a lot of mining juniors, we're not running around to sort of raise capital just to, you know, fund salaries, working cap and sort of work programs. It's we're self-perpetuating in that regard. And I guess most importantly, as a royalty company, as you add an asset, you don't add more employees. So really from here, every incremental dollar of revenue goes straight to bottom line profit. You know, there's no additional cost that comes with it.
All right, Adam, last question. What am I missing here? What is there something I needed to ask in this introduction for our listeners that I neglected to do that? And what would that be?
No, I don't think so. I think, yeah, I hope everybody got a flavor for what we're doing here. And I'd encourage people to go to the website. You know, we do put out news from time to time, and our quarterly for Q1 should be announced next week. We don't try to spam people and only put out announcements that are really pertinent. Yeah, it improves the website. We're reasonably active on social media, just keeping people posted. With 21 assets in the portfolio, as you can imagine, there's kind of enough organic news flow that there's always something happening of interest. And then we did 5 acquisitions last year, 4 kind of material acquisitions. So we're, you know, we're still a growth company looking to add to the portfolio. So pretty busy. Yeah, I'd encourage people to start to follow us.
All right. So expecting a busy 2024 into 2025, I assume.
Absolutely.
All right. Very good.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right. All right, Adam. Thanks so much. Everybody, that's your introduction to Trident Royalties. Pretty interesting makeup here. New royalty company, relatively new. They do trade on the AIM with TRR and on the OTC with TDTRF. Adam, thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Great. Thanks, Trevor.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.